Welcome to ITE1, Module 9, or actually, this is Module 10. But before we get started, we're actually going to do the activity from last week. So, does that make it part 3, or do we just. Yeah, you can trim this part off. How are we doing this?
I'll work it out, Sean. It's okay. It's not your problem. If necessary, I can split your module 9 and your module 10, and I can make it go, "Welcome to module na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na 10," if you want me to. So we'll sort that out.
All right. Okay, so this is an activity from Module 9. This is 9.5.2, and a couple of you sent it in, and it's been graded, and that's awesome. And but we are also doing it. We're also doing it now. Give me just a second to switch over to it, and I will read you the problem and see
If
what kind of questions you guys might have.
you're here in the classroom, you do not need to complete this activity. If you are not here, you need to send it in to me because you have not completed it. We do these a couple of these by attendance.
Can you
Can I
keep
do
track of
it?
that while I'm doing this?
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea of who's here.
Okay, thanks.
There's one person that isn't here that would be, or that would be two people. So yeah.
Okay, so it says, "I am not able to log in. I was able to log in yesterday and all days previously. I tried to log in with a different computer but was unsuccessful there also. I received an email last week about changing my password, but I've not changed my password yet." Okay, so what might be some questions you'd ask this person to figure out what the problem is?
That's not all, though. Is there's a little more to that, isn't there?
Actually, let me
Read the
look.
extra information.
Oh, at the bottom, yes. I'm sorry. It says computer configuration, Windows XP Pro. I do not know when it was last updated. There is some kind of antivirus program that used to run when I started the computer, but I haven't seen it recently. All right, that's all I have. So, what questions would you guys ask this ask?
Is your screen prompting you to change your password?
Well, I'm not sure. It doesn't let's see. It just says that I can't log in. That's all it tells me, is it says my password is incorrect.
Do you know if other people in your company or your department have had viruses?
Hang on, you're out, Rob. You
Yeah, for a
don't
second.
get two questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get another one, but
Okay, fair enough.
Someone else. But yes, good question. But yes, good question.
Has anyone else used your computer?
No, they haven't actually.
Do you remember the name of the antivirus?
Oh Lord, it's just this thing. I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Has anything else changed on the system in the time since you last saw the antivirus software?
No, I don't think so.
All right, guys, want a bit of a hint?
I've already got a really good idea. I've been doing this too long.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you guys a hint. Okay. I'm not able to log on any other computers. Think about that.
Were you ever able to log on a new computer?
Yeah, I could do it yesterday.
Is your router connected and plugged in?
Let me just. Yeah, it is. It is. I didn't go unplugging that.
Guys, look at the information you've been given. He's been given a message that he needs to change his password.
He was
But he.
emailed a few days ago that he needed to change his password and he ignored.
What do you think might have happened?
They locked
Password
him out.
expired.
Everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, because on some of those, if
Absolutely.
you don't change your password in a certain amount of time, it expires.
I actually had this happen to me at work, and I didn't get an email, but I think what would have happened, because I don't actually log into the network like some of the other guys do, they probably got messages that when they logged in that said, "You need to change your password." So suddenly I couldn't check my email. And my boss logged in and said, "Oh, okay, it says you have to change your password, so let me do it. Let me help you do that." So yeah, I've experienced this.
So the critical thing here, guys, is really pay attention to the information you've been given. This is number one skill of tech support. I got a message about changing my password and I can't log in anymore. I know there's a lot of information there, and I'm not saying everybody does this well the first time, but I got an email about my password and I haven't got around to changing it. I could log in yesterday. I can't log in today. Okay,
And
another
I
day
can't
has
log
gone
in on
over.
any other computer. They've given you some red herrings. The person asked a question
And that's intentional.
that did, Yeah, it's intentional. The antivirus question was absolutely to throw you off. That your level one tech didn't ask a question that gave you more information than you needed. So it threw you guys off. And it's important to weed out the extra information that you've been given and really
and
listen to.
You'll get that on calls. We'll try and make sure of that next week.
So this doesn't mean this doesn't mean that there's a problem. It just means that this gives you guys an idea of how to whittle this down to the point where you are picking out the important information. If ever you're working in a support role, skill one is listen to the customer. Even though it might be unpleasant and tedious and annoying and you might want to jump down the phone and exterminate your customer, you aren't allowed to do that. You do have to listen to what they say and their stories and stuff. So,
and really listen. And a lot of us don't, you know, oh, I know what the problem is. It's a lot about practicing active listening, which we'll have a talk about right very soon. Any questions about that exercise?
We're not having a go at you guys. We're just speaking from years of experience.
No, we're not. We're really not.
And it's
just
good
point,
that you...
Go
ahead.
How you would differentiate, say, between, they say they got a message to change password. It could be a company thing to change a password, or it could have also been like a phishing attempt. But based on the fact that they didn't change it, would you assume that that would be more the clue that they haven't changed it when it came from, that it would have been from a reliable source, that email?
Okay, step one, turn it off and turn it on again. Step two, reset the user's password. Step three, start looking at anything else. As a network admin, you just go in and reset somebody's password if they can't log in. That's your first step. You go, right, what do you want the new password to be? Clicky, 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 go. And then when they come back to you, you then take it from there. That's been my experience.
For me,
and
from a non-network administrator.
The reason you know that email is legit is because he couldn't log in on any of the computers. It's company-wide. So that's how we know, as the people looking at this right now.
He may have thought that it was a phishing email at first. Maybe he's new and has never seen something to change his password and deleted it. Now he knows. Now we know, because he's locked out, that, okay, that wasn't a phishing email. Now we need to action it. So at that point, we can surmise that it wasn't a phishing email. He has been locked out of the network. So then we action it. But, you know, that's a fair call. And I thought of that, too. I was like, the first time I did this activity, I'm like, well, maybe he got a virus. But then the whole point about I can't log in on any other computer led me to think about, well, maybe that email was legitimate and there isn't anything fishy, no pun intended, going on. And we need to check that out.
I think I need to ask them at work to email us password expires, because... For me, it was even weirder, because all of a sudden my email just wouldn't work. Because part of the reason I don't log in is because we don't yet have it set up so that I can actually access my files and on the network and stuff. Anyway, but I should ask. They should probably send something out.
Any other questions about this?
So would an appropriate question be, can anyone else log in your company?
Oh yes, that would be a great question.
Absolutely, that'd be a great one.
That would be an excellent question in that situation. Is this happening to anyone else that you're seeing? Or is this just you?
I'd actually say, is this just your account? We don't want to think that it's a problem with them.
No.
You have to be very neutral.
Is anyone else experiencing this difficulty?
Actually saying that is the proper customer service way to say that. But at this point, you can say, are you the only one experiencing this problem? And that's okay. You're not blaming them. It's not their fault. But you need to know if they're the only person who's having the issue.
That would narrow it down and give you the idea that, well, if they're the only one that ignored their email to change their password, then...
Remember that these emails come out on a rotating basis depending on when you've joined the company as well. It's usually you have to change your password every 60 to 90 days.
Some are every 14, I've seen, which is horrific.
Shh.
And you can't use the last banks, and you can't use the last 10. Oh, and don't increment the number, because they catch that one as well.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's have a go at the customer service module. we're going to talk about customer service best practices. Today, being a computer technician is just as much about fixing computers as it is about interacting with the people who own them, and that can be a challenge. In order to find out what is wrong with a computer or what a customer's needs are for building a new one, you'll have to talk to them. This is why your customer service skills are just as important as your technical ones. Think of a time when you had to call someone to repair something for you. How did you feel? How did you feel, Lynn, when you were dealing with the Verizon customer service representatives with your problem?
Very, 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 very frustrated.
And they weren't listening to you. And they kept telling you that you had a virus, or that you shouldn't run 2 virus checkers, or...
Well, and some were better than others. And the one that was just, like, nasty about it, you know, had me, like, ready to start being, like, well, I was very nasty back, you know? Like, you do get what you put there.
Anyone else have a story, good or bad customer service story? How did you feel when you called a customer service line?
You know what my favorite trick is when they start telling you that they can't do this and they can't do that and they can't do something else, I just sort of smile and say, all right, so what are our options at this point? And that can actually get them out of the thing of going, oh, we can't. Anyone else had to call customer service?
Often, but when I do, I usually end up calling company. I don't know. When I have called, I've usually gotten very lucky, I guess. But most of the time I've called, it's been like tech support for specific like blindy products, or you know, a phone carrier or whatever. So I haven't really needed to call like Roadrunner or anything yet.
I have one. I had Charter internet. And in my area, I don't know what the deal was, but we kept going off and online. It was absolutely ridiculous. And it got to the point where, you know, nobody knows anything about this. And I got so frustrated. And I was about to call up customer service and just absolutely go off on them. And I realized that when I was working on someone else's computer, I had unplugged the router. And this one was my fault. So I felt really stupid. And it really made me evaluate customer service.
I have the typical ones where they won't help if I can't see the lights on the modem and if there's no one sighted around. Yeah, I've encountered that a few times.
You know what I do, and Carrie and I do.
I was just about to say, actually, you tell your story in a second. I was just going to say, you've got an iPhone, get light detector, and that way you can see which lights are on the modem, which is one way to shut them up, but Grace has another option.
We read them off the diagnostic information from the router, and that usually scares them. And also we get to talk to a level 2 person who might understand these things, so you know, it's pretty funny.
And another time we could actually see the water, like we've got like a pit that the phone lines are in, and we could actually see they were full of water. So I rang up and reported a fault and said the phone lines are full of water, and they're like, oh no, turn your modem off and turn it on again. And I'm saying, look, my husband can actually see the water in the, you know, the phone lines are covered in water, you know. And they're like, oh, you have to go through all these steps.
No, really, there's a problem, guys. They are drowning.
I recently called Dell for tech support, and I got somebody in India that was very difficult to understand, but she was very nice. And you know, the only problem was that she had to repeat things more than once because it was difficult to understand her.
Yeah, that is really hard.
I usually have them that they can't understand me, and I remember, I mean, I don't know if it's a New York thing, like, you know, like when you're not, you don't speak United States, and I remember going through something with this one guy that I said, I have to speak to somebody in my country, or I have to speak to a supervisor, because you cannot understand me. And he kept making me repeat it, and I eventually started spelling out sentences like I space C A, and that's what he wanted from me, because he could not understand me.
Wow.
And he made me go through some form or something to be allowed to speak to a supervisor. It was so horrible.
Yeah.
I had an interesting situation once. I did some tech support for a company everything Linux, and I was looking after their office. And the guy was, you know, there were calls coming in that I was answering, and they were asking questions about, will this hard drive work with Linux, and will this work with Linux, and rah, rah, rah. And it got to about 10:30 in the morning, and Anthony sort of came over and said, how come I'm not getting any calls? You're not putting any calls through to me. I said, well, I've been able to answer the question. He's like, we've got to change our phone answering staff. I like the way this is working. I didn't end up getting a job with them because I didn't want to move to Sydney, but it is an interesting way about, you know, whether the calls get through to the level 2 supervisors. And it cuts both ways. There are times when you should be put through to level 2, and then there are times when a lot of people should never make it to level 2 because their problem doesn't need to be solved by them.
Okay. Remember, the good
community... Some people get so angry that they say, I need this... supervisor person, and you probably don't. I bet you that is that what you were talking about? People that just have to have the service right now, and you
know. Well, the problem is it's difficult to. I mean, in Lynn's case, the person couldn't understand her, and that is a genuine problem. But the level ones are trained not to hand you across if you demand it, unless you can justify your demand. Which obviously she eventually did, but it's cuts both ways. It's really difficult because the level twos don't want to be bothered by somebody who has got their modem unplugged if they can help it.
You know what was a really funny one is that my monitor wigged out, and I don't remember what happened to it or what exactly, but you know, my screen reader is working fine, and I'm sitting there on my call ready to do all this troubleshooting, and they don't want to troubleshoot if there's no monitor. And I'm like, it doesn't matter, I have, you know, I have speech access, I can, you know, look up anything you want me to look up, and they're like, no, we'll just give you a new one. I was like so disappointed.
That is funny. Okay. Remember that good communication skills take time and practice to develop, just like your technical skills. And, you know, that really goes for that exercise. You didn't need to get that right on the first go, and I hope you guys learned something by doing it. But don't feel bad, because it takes time, and the next couple weeks we're going to work on our technicians' customer service skills. You'll get some practice next week in the role play. A knowledgeable technician who uses good communication skills will always be in demand in the job market. The first step in solving a problem is usually speaking with a customer. In order to troubleshoot computers, you need to know the symptoms of the problem from the customer's point of view. You know from experience that a broken computer is stressful. It is important to develop a good rapport with the customer. This will help them to relax a bit and give you the information you need. Now, it's time to talk about what these magical good communication skills are and good professional behavior. Remember these three rules at the beginning of your conversation. No, call the customer by their first name, if you can. Relate. Use brief communications to create a one-to-one connection between you and your customer.
There you go.
Make sure, yeah, I'm really sorry that's happened. That must be really hard. We'll try and fix this right away. Try to show them that you relate to them and understand their problem, and you'll have a lot easier time getting the information. Okay, understand. Determine the customer's level of knowledge about the computer to know how to effectively communicate with the customer. So listen to how they speak when they're telling you their problem, and understand what jargon and words they use, and this will help you. To establish this, practice active listening skills. And this seems to be where we fell down in our activity today. Let the customer tell the whole story. While the customer is describing the problem, say things such as, I understand, yes, I see, or okay, at occasional appropriate times. This lets the customer know that you are listening. Never interrupt the customer to ask a question or make a statement, because this is disrespectful. We all try to think of what to say before someone finishes speaking. So, did anyone find they were doing this while Sean was reading the information to you guys? No? No one's going to own up to it.
Yeah, I was sitting there looking for the lab so I could, like, figure out which one it was and that I didn't need to do it.
Mm-hmm. When you're listening, and it's very hard to do, especially if you have a very active mind, and I do, you really have to listen to what the customer is saying. Don't try to cut them off and think of what the problem is while they're speaking. Have a listen, because that little tiny bit of information that they give you, one or two words might be what gives you an idea of what the problem is. And if you're already busy spinning your wheels, you may miss that.
Can I just point out here that these are all recommended rules by Cisco, but if you get a really terrible storyteller, you could be there for 45 minutes. And that's problematic.
Well, we'll talk about storytellers anyway. There is a rule where you do interrupt. And there is a time when you do that. And we will talk about the chatty customer, the storyteller. So, yes.
Does this thing of using people's first names actually really go over anywhere? Because, Grace, you know, I understand where you're coming from. And, Grace, I hear that you're having a problem. I mean, I just want to strangle people when they do
Me
that.
Too.
Yeah, well, you don't have to do it often. But if you say, you know, when you come back on the line after putting someone on hold, that's a good time to do it. When you are hanging up the call, that's a good time to do it. If you have the person's account up, if you greet them by their first name, that's a good time to do it. Otherwise, you know, not really. You don't have to overuse it, but a couple of well-placed, you know, if it's well-placed, it can make some customers feel like they're valued and aren't just a number, which they are, but, you know.
I have to suppress the urge to say, that's my name, don't wear it out, but when they really, you know, get onto using your first name all the time. I think it's a balance you've got to strike. But it does prove that they've actually remembered who you are. I think that's the psychology behind it, that they still know who you are. Then again, I have questions about how clever the tech support rep is if they can't remember who you are with the name printed on the screen in front of you. But you never know.
If you're calling them back, it's good to ask for, you know, you know, ask for them by first name, possibly. I don't know. It's a psychology thing. You don't have to do it all the time, and you don't. It can be overkill, but when we do this, when we're thinking about what the problem might be while we're listening, we're not listening as carefully to the person speaking to us. It's important to try not to do this in customer service. As I said, this is something I really struggle with. When the customer has finished, clarify what they've said to let the customer know you were listening and understanding what they said. A good way to do this is to paraphrase what the customer said. You can begin with these words. Let me see if I understand what you have told me. Now, it's time to ask the customer any follow-up questions you might have. Make sure that you ask questions that are relevant to the problem. Never ask questions that the customer has already answered when they were explaining the problem. We had somebody do that today and ask if they'd ever been able to log on, when one of the first things they'd said was, I was able to log on yesterday. This can really shake a customer's confidence because they believed you were listening to them. And it's like, I've already told you that. And that can, it's one quick and sure way to annoy the customer. These follow-up questions should be closed-ended questions. Remember that closed-ended questions should have a yes, no, or factual answer. A closed-ended question with a factual answer would be, is this a desktop or a laptop computer? It is important to behave professionally when dealing with customers. Always be prompt and respectful. If you are working with customers via phone, make sure you know how to use the phone system. Know how to put the customers on hold, resume calls, and transfer customers without disconnecting them. I'm sure we've all had that happen to us before. Your job on a call is to help the customer focus and communicate the problem so that you can solve it. Be positive. Focus on what you can do rather than on what you can't do. I can't isn't so good. Tell them what you can do first. Well, we can, if you send the hard drive in, we'll be happy to fix it. But unfortunately, we don't do in-home pickups. Tell customers about alternative ways you can help them, such as email, faxed, and remote access software. Here's a scenario. A customer is not comfortable installing a service pack and wants a technician to come out and help them. Helping with updates is not a service you provide, But a is a service you will can provide, but a technician will not be able to come over for another 2 weeks. You have remote access software. What are you going to say to the customer? Any ideas?
We have remote software. We can do this remotely, but unfortunately we can't send a technician out for another 2 weeks.
Even better, we have remote software and we'd be happy to do this remotely, or we can schedule an appointment for a technician to come out to your house in 2 weeks. We don't have to make that a negative. Maybe they can wait. We don't know what kind of time frame they're on. Remember that customers are people too. They can sense whether you are interested in helping them, just like you would be able to. When putting a customer on hold, let them finish what they are saying. Tell the customer that you need to put them on hold, then ask them for permission. Do so when they have agreed. Thank them and tell them how long you expect to be away and what you will be doing during this time. When transferring a call, use the same procedure.
Yeah, that's an ideal situation.
Yeah, exactly.
I've called paratransit dispatch, please hold click.
Yeah.
So obviously not everyone knows how to do that.
Use the same procedure you would use for putting on hold. Tell the customer the phone number you are transferring them to in case they are disconnected. Make sure to tell the person you are transferring to the call to your name, the customer's name, and the related ticket number or description of the problem. Avoid minimizing the customer's problems. Avoid using jargon, abbreviation, acronyms, and slang. Avoid negative attitude or tone of voice. It helps to actually smile when you're speaking to somebody, because you can hear a smile in somebody's voice rather than if you are frowning and gritting your teeth and, oh, I don't want to be here. Avoid arguing with the customer or becoming defensive. Avoid culturally insensitive remarks. Avoid being judgmental, insulting, or calling the customer names. Avoid distractions and interruptions when talking with customers. Avoid taking personal calls when talking with customers. Avoid talking to coworkers about unrelated subjects when talking with the customer. Avoid unnecessary holds, abrupt holds. Avoid transfers without explaining the purpose of the transfer and getting the customer consent. Avoid negative remarks about other technicians to the customer. It's important for you to keep control of the call and keep the customer focused on the call at all times. This will ensure that you do not waste your time or the customer's. Stay calm with the customer. If the customer makes rude comments, do not take it personally and do not retaliate. Always remember that the customer's problem is not your fault. You're basically just the messenger. So the rude comments are not directed at you as a technician, even if they say that you're a horrible technician. Most of the time, they're just angry with the company and angry with what's going on or that something isn't possible. It isn't about you, even if they kind of insinuate that it is.
Sighted people are actually incidentally told to, in some workplaces, actually have mirrors near your desk so that you can actually look and, you know, make sure that you are as smiling and stuff, and that you are aware of how you actually are coming across. That doesn't really help us much, but I thought you would find that interesting.
Try to identify the problem customers and how to deal with them. This is not a comprehensive list of problem customers, and you might get customers with a combination of these traits. Lucky you. A talkative customer. This is our storyteller. Talks about everything except the problem on the call. The customer often uses the call as an opportunity to socialize. It can be difficult to get a talkative customer to focus on the problem. Allow the customer to talk for 1 minute. Gather as much information about the problem as possible. Politely step in to refocus the customer. This is the exception to the rule of never interrupting a customer. You may have to. Do ask as many closed-ended questions as you need to once you have regained control of the call. Try not to ask open-ended questions if you can all help it. Do not encourage non-problem related conversations by asking social questions such as, how are you today? Any questions on talkative customers? Someone will get one of these next week. You have a rude customer. A rude customer complains during the call and often makes negative comments about product, service, and the technician. Remember, it's not your fault. This type of customer is sometimes abusive, uncooperative, and gets aggressive very easily. Do listen very carefully, as you do not want to ask the customer to repeat any information. Follow a step-by-step approach to determining and solving the problem. If the customer has a favorite technician, try to contact that technician to see if they can take the call, if that's allowed in your company. As an example, tell the customer, "I can either help you right now or see if the preferred technician is available. They will be available in 2 hours. Will that be acceptable?" If the customer wants to wait for the other technician, record this in the ticket. Apologize for the wait time and then an inconvenience, even if there has been no wait. Reiterate that you want to solve their problem as quickly as possible. Do not ask the customer to do any obvious steps if there is any way you can determine the problem without them. Do not be rude back to the customer, even if they're rude to you. Any questions? If they abuse you...
Imagine it's customers like them that are the reason that so many techs get burnt out. I think it would have to
be. If they're abusive to you, your company may have a policy on what you need to do. You may be able to end the call or transfer them to a supervisor or do something like that. Always check your company's policy on what to do with an abusive customer. An angry customer talks loudly during the call and often tries to speak when the technician is talking. Angry customers are usually frustrated that they have a problem and upset that they have to call somebody to fix it. Do let the customer tell their problem without interrupting, even if they're angry. This allows the customer to release some of their anger before you proceed. Sympathize with the customer's problem. Apologize for the wait time and inconvenience, even if there wasn't any. Do not, if at all possible, try not to put this customer on hold or transfer the call. Do not spend the call time talking about what caused the problem, rather than redirect the conversation to solving the problem. You have the knowledgeable customers, and yes, this can be bad. And there's a subcategory of customers who think they are knowledgeable and completely aren't. A knowledgeable customer wants to speak with a technician that is equally experienced in computers. This type of customer usually tries to control the call and does not want to speak with a level 1 technician. If you are a level 1 technician, you might try to set up a conference call with a level 2 technician. Give the customer the overall approach to what you are trying to verify. Do not follow a step-by-step process with this customer. Don't tell them, ask them if they've turned it on and off again as much. Unless you believe that they're a customer that is not as knowledgeable as they seem. Do not ask to check the obvious, such as power cords or the power switch. As an example, you could suggest a reboot instead. Inexperienced customers. An inexperienced customer has difficulty describing the problem. These customers are usually not able to follow directions correctly and not able to communicate the errors that they've encountered. Inexperienced customers, you want to use a simple step-by-step approach. Speak in plain terms. Don't use jargon. Do not be condescending to your customer or belittle them. Can someone tell me what a flame war is? We're moving on. I'll just see if anyone has any questions on any of these customer types.
Some of those are awfully blurry, like rude and angry customer. It's kind of like my mind almost wants to group those together. So it's kind of interesting the way they've broken these down.
No, rude doesn't have to be angry. Angry is somebody who is upset at something that's happened. Rude is somebody who doesn't adhere to protocols. Now, one of the interesting issues we had with one of our students, and this is a difference in culture, is we had an Indian student that when he decided he'd finished talking with you, he'd just hang up. So he'd go, okay, you don't need to do worksheet 1.4.7. Yeet, click, and he's gone. And we really had to sit him down and explain to him that in English-speaking countries, we have a protocol to follow, and mate, don't hang up on me until I've said goodbye to you, because the things I'm about to tell you are somewhat important. But he would have been defined as rude, and different cultures handle this in different ways. So rude and angry aren't the same thing.
They could both be abusive, but not. They don't necessarily have
That's
to be an angry
where my
customer.
Mind went,
an angry is, customer wait, does well, not have to be abusive. And a rude customer doesn't have to be angry. They can just be up themselves and horrible.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, imagine if I rang up and I said, I want you to fix my problem now. I don't have time for this. You know, I could be considered to be quite rude to you. I'm not interested in your little hoo-ha dance about troubleshooting. I just want my problem resolved.
That's awesome.
Any questions on customer types? Can anyone think of any other customer types?
Well, there's the blind customer type that they probably should have a unit on in this manual, so that, like, or, you know, like, if somebody says to you, I can't use the mouse, like, there are people who can't translate, and if you keep telling them to click on things, they're not going to know what to do, you know, and the sighted guy should know how to deal with that.
You know, I'm kind of in two minds about that. I kind of feel like if you have been taught by your access trainer correctly, you should know how to that double click.
What access trainer?
Enter.
Some people get no training, and who gets? People don't just get training, you know. Like some people do, which is why some of us have some work. But people do the best they can, you know, and they're paying for the same software or the same hardware or the same everything as everyone else.
Alex,
with often inaccessible interface.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'll try and advise tech support that I use a screen reader and, you know, I might access things a bit differently. But I get, are you really blind? Can you really not see anything? And it's like, yes, no.
Don't ask your customer to educate you on the call about their disability. There's one. Alex,
but like we're not the people that are the problem. Like if somebody tells us what to do, we could go an alternative way and we can get something done. But the average blind person really is lost on most of these calls.
They would probably end up in the inexperienced group, though.
Except, don't you think? I mean, I think somewhere in there they're missing a chapter, you know, or a unit that says this is a reality. You know, like this is actually this is like a separate problem besides being inexperienced. Then people should. Like, be aware of it. They, you know, the average person, you know,
and what about the average
learn
customer service
to talk to them?
Oh.
Yeah,
because I've heard stories
Yeah, can I just point out here that we are delivering a sighted course to blind people.
But
so
she
I
wants that kind of disability awareness training in sighted courses.
Can we run
you?
This for 2 years? Can we have 2 years to run ITE1? Because we could do, like, you know, 47 modules. We hear you, and there's a lot that's missing from this course. For example, unattended Windows installs get jumped across, and how to deal with blind people gets jumped across. I'm agreeing with you 100%, but unfortunately, at this point, they fund us to deliver a sighted course.
No, I don't think we need the unit. I think they all need
the unit. No, she's thinking that a disability awareness thing would be great to put into the ITE curriculum for customer service. That, yeah, and I'm kind of with you, and I'm kind of not, because
I'm with Grace
also
as well, because maybe it's just because I've been doing this for a while, but when someone says, okay, double click my computer, I know what to do. And
if you,
you know,
yeah,
it's hard because I have gotten used to sort of going back.
Yes,
and
but you do.
And blind.
But if they don't, they're going
so
to have other inexperience. They're going to not be very experienced with the computer as a blind person anyway.
Right,
they aren't
but
going
the
to
average
be
tech. The people on the other end of it, what they start doing, if they start explaining things more simply, is they tell them more about what to look for and what to click on. Like, they don't... I think it's a different issue. And I've been in the middle of this, you know, where, I mean, I was 2 hours on a call with a friend who is like that. She can't translate. This is not what she does, you know. And she uses the computer to use the computer. And this, I think it was the phone companies, maybe it was Verizon again. Verizon had some software that froze something on her computer. It was supposed to be security software, and it screwed up her computer. And she called me, and a three-way called me in, asked with the technical support person, because that person couldn't tell her how to get to the places she needed to get to do the things. Well, I think the person could have, but, you know, they're not taught how to think about it. And, you know, if this is something for the general public.
Yeah. I don't know how much of it they should be taught to think. I don't know if they should be taught to think in that way necessarily. I mean, blindness education's great. Awesome. If you can do it, if you have time, that's great. But these people might encounter one or two blind people in their careers. We need to educate blind people how to think and work in
Think ways they can think. There is, I want to say it's stupid, but there is regular, so if Verizon wants to figure out how to serve them, maybe they need to hire more people like us. But
absolutely.
Like, you can't make Verizon somebody have a different kind of mind than what they have.
Hire a lot of blind people here.
Keep in mind, though, a lot of these people are reading from a decision tree script that doesn't have blind people in it.
Which is a problem. And I think that's a problem. And it's not just blindness. It's people who use the keyboard instead of the mouse. And it includes an awful lot of people when you start breaking down, like, you know, and you've got people with disabilities who have fewer resources and are spending more effort to buy these products with less money. You know, I think they should be required to provide technical support on something they're selling.
I agree with you in principle, 100%. But the reality is these people are in India on $5 an hour with a decision tree script, and that is what our economics has done to them. So I don't know how we change the world, you know, these people are very... Level 1 tech support people aren't known for their ingenuity. That's probably the nicest way I can put it, generally speaking. And especially if they're out in some company on cheap VoIP. And that's the economics of the business.
So then let me just point out, you know, if this comes up again when you say this, level 1 tech support people aren't known for, then don't expect the average blind person who isn't even a tech support person, who's an author, an artist, or whatever they do, you know, who, like, if somebody can't be trained to do this in a course like this, then don't expect the average person to be able to communicate back on the other end. You know, I mean, the gap is there, and just say the gap is there, and we don't know what it is. But don't start saying, when you start saying blind people have to be able to, you know, you just start saying, only the superb and incredible blind people are allowed to live, you know?
No, because I'm completely not, I think that's completely not on, because there are things I can't do, and I have been actually told that before, and that's not on. But the things I can do is try to teach as many blind people about how, you know, the double click is enter, how Windows key commands work, what's the difference between Windows keyboard commands are and screen reader commands are, and that's what I can do. And if I meet other technicians in the course of my work, I can educate them myself, and I can do blind awareness training, and I can do all that. But that's all I can do, and that gap, it's a huge gap, and that's what I can do to close it.
Yeah. No, we certainly hear you.
Whenever I hear the solution has to be blind people have to be able to, because, you know, basically rules out me from a lot of things. You know, it says I'm not a valid person. Because I'm not those people with the great memories.
Run the recording. Have we said this? Have we actually said this to you?
There was an edge of it there. And I just want to, like, you know, I have a bristle when I start to hear that. So
yeah. I don't want to say that.
I don't think
but
it
I
was
do.
Intentional. I don't think Grace meant it intentionally. But I think... I see where she's going, and I struggle with this, with trying to teach this too. I think that if a person is able to understand the computer fairly well, then learning how a mouse user does things, I've just kind of learned it by listening to other sighted people explain things and paying
attention
to...
But you're not the person who's having the problem, right? You're the person who can handle these things. Be aware there's an awful lot of people who can't.
I think we're always going to... I mean, this is a bit like politics, religion. We can have this debate all night, and it's an interesting discussion to have. I think the reality is that, yes, there are a lot of variances in what people do, and it's an age-old problem. Who should have the skills? How much skills should the people have? What should people's expectations are? Why should you be holding these expectations up to people? And what are we all going to do about it?
And... I think you've convinced me to go onto that new IT Essentials forum and write a post about it and bring this to the attention. Because having a paragraph or two about people with alternative needs in this section would be a really good idea. And it's kind of cool, and sadly, I never thought of it. I don't know if it'll happen, but it is at least something that I can sit down and write to somebody about doing it. And maybe that'll help, but you don't know, and we can do both things. We can educate everybody as much as we can and try to get our abilities up and try to get the technicians to understand us better, because it works both ways.
We had a big debate, actually, as to whether to modify every lab exercise to be JAWS compatible. Press. Or whether we left a lot of them intact. And it was a very difficult thing to balance out on. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. I don't say we get it right all the time, but we do leave a lot of the material verbatim so that people get exposed to the regular way of expressing the material. And it is a challenge as an organization to figure out how much do you blindify it? How much do you disableify it? Or reframe it. How much do I enable this for this group of people? It just depends on who's looking at it and how you're looking at it, as whether we're, how we're changing it.
We had a student... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that, us taking, people at the level that we're doing this should be able to understand what something means when they say, what the clicking issue means. I don't know if it matters. I don't know if it matters here.
But see, there's somebody I've been working with at work for a very long time that she wouldn't care. Grace knows exactly who I'm talking about. She doesn't really even understand how a mouse works, doesn't care, doesn't need to know that double clicking is the same as pressing enter. So it's both ways, too. I understand completely what you're saying.
It does matter.
And
if we can bring the two groups together, if we can train up people who know these things, you guys can go up and educate more people and educate both technicians and people who need to use computers, and you guys can be the liaisons between these people as well. So that's my point. If you're at this level, we need to know these kind of things. I've always been a huge advocate for that because of my training.
The blindness tech books, Kathy Ann is very good at this for the Windows 7. She's very good at explaining what the screen looks like. You can get
all of this. All of this stuff is now freely available.
You can.
This is an interesting point. Speaking of ribbons, now I'm sorry. If you've got blood pressure medication, now would be the time to take double dose. Okay. Just to deal with the ribbons issue that we talked about a few months ago. One of the organizations with which I'm involved, and I won't say which organization it is, teaches people how to use Office with, okay, left justify that paragraph with Alt-M, Q-Q, P-M-M, Control-B, Enter. Now,
and you must memorize these keystrokes.
And that's how you do it. Now, I object to that a lot. Because you know what? I just forgot. And
I don't know what you said.
I've been in computers for 20 years, and I just forgot how to do that. And I'm happy with that.
But yeah, it's not reasonable to expect someone to do Alt J L T R to do something in a table. That's not like I'm glad Microsoft put it there.
So now we get into the issue of, you know, and we don't want to talk about how we're going to teach our classes all morning because we've got the rest of the module to do, but we do have to ask ourselves how we're going to teach people, how we're going to enable people to learn things, and how we're going to, you know, empower people. My first thing in office would be teach people about how the help system works. Then go back and, you know, teach them a few keyboard shortcuts and stuff. But, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
We've been going back and forth at work as to whether we should teach the JAWS virtual ribbon, and I'm absolutely against it.
I hate the show idea. Them it's available at some point, but yeah, show them the ribbon as well.
I don't know. I've resorted to using the application's key as much as you can, and
oh, me too.
You know,
that is a good thing.
There's great stuff in there, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I do think.
And there's stuff I used to be able to do that I don't know how to do anymore, and I can't find it anywhere unless you go on Google and, you know, asked and looked through 20 posts for somebody who...
I do that all the time.
The good thing about the ribbons, though, is that everybody else, the sighted people, are using the same horror we are. So their directions about on the home tab, do this, this, and this, they work the same. It's not like in older versions where you had menus versus toolbars, and where is this on the toolbar, where is this on the menu. It's all in the same place on the ribbon.
Yeah.
So that I do like.
It does equalize it.
It does make converting a lot easier, because... I've actually been able to help sighted people who in the lab, because I know the training that we use, I've been able to help them find stuff on the ribbon without even being able to see it, because it's in the same place for them.
I think as trainers, if we can, if that person has the ability to learn it, we need it. We owe it to them to teach them about just the simple things, like when they tell you to click on something, you want to press enter. This is how a mouse works. Just so you know, because that's the world that they are living in.
Anyway, let's crack on here.
Huh? What is your audio
bracket? Did Alex ever get what he wanted? I don't think he ever got to say what he wanted to say.
I think the other thing is... Yeah, he missed an amazing debate. I think the reality is that... just derailed my train of thought, which is probably good. Let's move on.
Alright. Good point, though. I'm definitely going to write to them and see what other people think, because I think it's a good idea.
Oh, yes, I did remember. I got into a fight with one of the trainers here because it's spacebar to activate a button, and they're like, no, it's not, just tell the students to press enter. And I actually found if you're formatting a disk and you press enter, it will actually activate the button that is now selected as the default, not the button you're sitting on. So that was a good dance around the lab.
Yeah, and to find out the default button,
always
I think it's insert E.
Buttons, always. Yep, insert E, delete.
Except that just after
except
you've taught somebody
internet.
All the rules
the internet,
about spacebar and enter, there are places where they try spacebarring and it doesn't work and they have to press enter. You know, because nothing is ever designed.
That's why I tell
spacebar
first.
Properly.
Always try spacebar first. And then if that doesn't do what you want. But it's just, you have to learn, it's just kind of figuring it out.
And Marlene, yes, you should be responsible for what you want to know, but the problem is that a lot of people don't know what they want or need to know because they're very new to computers. All right. Flame war, something we just barely avoided. No, not really.
Yeah, pretty much. Not in written form, but...
Can anyone tell me what a flame war is? No?
Anyone?
No takers?
Somebody says something in an email message or in a forum, and another person says, that's ridiculous, and it turns into a back and forth...
it devolves into a giant fight.
Yes, it's basically somebody winds somebody else up, and the entire list or a couple people basically spend their time on the forum or email list just hurling insults, being awful, and saying things that should never be said.
I have an amazing example of this, which is not offensive, but it's an excellent example. We're posting, a friend of mine posted about how they had a hearing problem and they were having trouble crossing the road because they couldn't hear traffic. And my ex-wife wrote back and said, I have trouble because I can't, I can't see the cars when they're coming down the, down the road, and that's a problem for me. And this guy, who was the boyfriend of the deaf person, just wrote back and said, "Oh, gee, you should already be dead by now. I'm surprised a car hasn't run you down and flattened you. Well, I hope it happens soon." And it's like, that's a perfect example of flame war. It was, I had to drag this person away from their computer going, "No, you will not reply to that now. This is not cool. We are going to ignore this person, and we're going to move away, and we're not going to kill little furry animals." Because...
that's a good question.
You mean like the okay. person who won't explain anything?
Most of the time they're riled up enough to talk to you at the point that they're calling you. I don't know what you'd do.
I actually say to them, "Yeah, look, we're going to work together on this. Now, for us to work together, I need you to talk to me about what it is. And if we can't do this, then I can't solve your problem. And if I can't hear them, I'm going to have to ask them very nicely to speak up. And if you can't speak up, I say, look, my phone is already at full volume. I'm going to have to transfer you somewhere else because I can't hear you."
Yeah, that is a really good question. Okay. My poor machine was auto-scrolling the whole time I was talking to you guys. That's really annoying.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Wow. Oh, that is...
I didn't think it did that, or did the key stick down?
No, it can auto-scroll.
If you accidentally hit both
must
scroll
press
buttons at the same time, that it'll do it.
Okay.
While you're waiting for Grace to find her place in the notes... Oh, good.
Okay. So, do you ever wonder... when people say horrible things on the internet, whether they would say these things in real life, "I'm going to come and kill your mother and burn down your house, and then I'm going to go into the rotten shell of the fridge and eat the ice cream out of it." You know, is this something they'd say to you in person?
I don't think so. I don't think they would.
No.
I usually do, but then I'm the exception. I just go up to people and tell them. They go, "You wrote me an email last night." I'm like, "Would you like me to say it to you? Would that help?" And they're just like, "No." I'm like, "Okay, well, we could either sort this out or whatever." But yeah, I tend to be the same online as I am in real life.
Yeah. Have you received an email with terrible spelling or grammar? Not the announcements that I write right before I'm going to bed. Those don't count, really, honestly. No, I'm just kidding. We have a friend... who didn't really learn her Braille very well. In fact, she would memorize stories and would speak them back to the teacher, and they didn't realize she was doing this till about third grade. So when she writes, her spelling and grammar is absolutely terrible. So much so that, well, you're lucky if you're blind, because you might have an idea of what she's saying. Because she kind of spells it out. But then again, you might not. You'll get completely incoherent stuff. And it's very sad, because this woman is not very employable, unfortunately. And
she's very smart. But I have friends who follow her on Twitter that have had to unfollow her because they cannot make heads or tails out of their tweets, and it makes their brain hurt, and they can see, and they just cannot visually read it.
And as an interesting aside, her inability to spell and construct her sentences has really affected the way most people interact with her. They judge her based on their spelling, and she's like, "I'm smart, and I'm clever, and why can't people accept me for who I am just because I can't spell?" And
Well, because you look like you.
Well, no, I sort of smiled and said, "Well, don't type at them." Was my answer. It's like, don't type at these people. Skype them up or something.
Yeah. We had a friend, and he's like, "Oh, that girl's really stupid." And we're like, "No, actually, she's not. You should talk to her." And,
why doesn't she get
really?
Dragon and learn how to use it? I never thought
she
to
is.
Ask her that.
Her dragon is premium and doesn't work with the... it doesn't work with... premium doesn't work with the JSA scripts.
It works
and
with
that's
JTools
what she won.
For dictation only. Which I should tell her about, but anyway. As a technician, it's always good form to practice good netiquette in our online communications. Does anyone not know or is unfamiliar with the word netiquette?
As opposed to netiquad, which is the thing we all log into.
Does anyone not know? Because we'll define it, but if everybody knows, we won't. All right. Here's some rules you should abide by. Remember that you are dealing with people. Adhere to the same standards of behavior that you follow in real life. So don't actually say stuff that you wouldn't say in real life. Because these are people. This is not just lovely little computer punching bags. These are people with feelings and all of that good stuff. Know where you are in cyberspace. Are you on your Facebook page with all of your family? Because if you're going to post that picture of your drunken night with fun, you may not want to do that on your Facebook. You know, if you call into work for a mental health day and your boss is on your Facebook, you might not want to post about chucking a sickie and going to the game, you know. Make sure you're aware of where you are. Just like we have to be aware of our environment in real life, always be aware of your environment in cyberspace.
Anyone who's been to social should know exactly how this works, shouldn't you all?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, I will admit to the other, there was a day when I was grading labs, and I just must have had a really crap day, because I was told, you know, your responses weren't very helpful that, you know, that day, and so yeah, a couple people did get apologies.
Your responses were bordering on rude. You may actually want to check that
and
out,
I didn't,
you know?
Yeah, and I didn't mean to. But I just, you know.
Respect other people's time and bandwidth. Americans, this one's for you, because we don't think about it. In America, you guys have unlimited bandwidth, well, basically unlimited bandwidth, and don't worry about sending that 10 megabyte song through email, or keeping yourself keyed up on lecture all the time in a Team Talk channel. In other countries, and some places in America, especially for university students, you have limited bandwidth, so people can only pull down a certain amount a month before they're either cut off, get charged more money, or their internet is significantly slowed down. Always, always keep that in mind.
I remember when Grace came to Australia, she used to have this habit of downloading 5-10 meg utilities and just hitting run, because let's face it, who wants the installer saved away? And that was a bit of an education for her. It's like, well, no, in Australia we do want the installer saved away, because one, we've got 10 computers, and two, we do have limited bandwidth. So save all those little installers, don't just hit run.
Share expert knowledge, or don't go on about what you're not talking about or what you don't know about. If you're not sure of the answer to a question, and you kind of think you know, but you're not so sure about what you're talking about, but you want to look good, that probably isn't a message you want to post. Because if you're wrong, it's really going to impact your reputation. Do not engage in flame wars online. That's pretty obvious. Respect other people's privacy. Here's one that people do. Ever get those emails where every single person in your address book is CC'd, in someone's address book is CC'd? And basically all of everybody's email addresses are right out there? That is not a good idea. If you're going to send email to people, always, or a lot of people who don't know each other and may not want their email addresses all over, make sure to BCC them and respect their privacy. Be forgiving of other people's mistakes. Everybody has been new on the internet at one point. It's our job as people who have been on the internet a while to help educate these people in a nice way when they make a mistake. Begin each email, even within a thread, with the appropriate greeting. Never send chain letters via email. Do not send or reply to flames. Used mixed case. Uppercase is considered shouting. Does everybody understand about that?
Oh, I just realized. That's the reason screen readers raise their pitch for uppercase instead of lowercase, because they're trying to simulate the shouting effect.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way of looking at that.
Yeah. I have noticed before, and
maybe
I've written
to
people.
That's why I find it so annoying, and yeah. I shut it off.
Yeah, that's the problem. But if you hit your caps lock key, and I've done this before, and I'll be writing to someone sighted and just not realize, and they're like, why are you shouting? Oh, sorry, I pressed my caps lock key down, and I completely didn't know it.
Doesn't yours beep when you hit shift and capital
no.
letters?
Oh, yes, it does. I don't remember.
It does.
But I wasn't. I didn't capitalize.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. On MSN Messenger, well, who needs full stops, commas, and capital letters? I mean, we're just IMing after all. Scrimmage, scrimmage, scrimmage.
I don't know what I was doing.
LOL.
I don't know why it happened. Usually I'd notice.
Toggle keys is good, except for when you need to use caps lock as a screen reader modifier. If you have a desktop keyboard, it doesn't get quite as annoying. That's the beep beep.
You can actually map it over somewhere else with auto hotkey, but let's not get into that.
Check grammar and spelling before you post. When you see somebody's post on a list, and you see that they've misspelled a bunch of stuff and written grammatically incorrect messages, well, I always think, that doesn't look very good. That doesn't seem very smart. And maybe this person, you know, isn't... maybe their advice isn't as good. And sadly, that's a horrible thing for me to say, but really...
There have been some people
like
that their messages irritate me so much because of spelling and grammar things, not students, but there have been people on mailing lists whose I have had to refuse reading any of their messages because they're all like that, and I can't deal.
Oh, absolutely. Be ethical. Don't be nasty, and don't break the law, if you can help it. Never email or post anything you would not say to someone's face. And that's basically our rules for proper netiquette. Does anyone else have any rules that they'd like to talk about that we haven't covered?
I have one, but let's see if anybody else has any.
Anybody awake?
There used to be a whole list of rules that were almost issued. Any email list, any listserv, or any place you'd get on would have them sort of like for new people, and they seem to have gone away. And it included things like, you know, if you join a new list, spend a couple of weeks listening to what people say before you start participating, so that you stick with the... with the pattern of the way people already interact on this list, and you know, and what it means to overpost and things like that. I thought they were good ideas. I don't know if they exist anymore, but
here's an anecdotal story for you. I thought about putting up a list of those rules because I'm the mailing list administrator for Cavi, and they are a good set of rules, and they are very well thought out, and they're amazing. But if I had a dollar for everybody who didn't read, Bill Gates would be the second richest guy in the world. So in theory, I'm absolutely 100% with you on putting these rules up, but in my experience, most of the students I come across, and perhaps this is the current group of students are an exemption to that rule, they can't even manage their own mailing list subscription, even though it sent them a message and told them exactly how to get into the interface and onto the web pages to manage it. So my faith in people actually being able to read this set of rules is only slightly higher than my faith in the fact that they read the intro message to the list. I'm getting a bit cynical in my old age, I admit. So just in case you're feeling bad here and you're going, how do I manage my list subscription? Okay, on the first of each month, you are sent a message and it's got your list password in it. If you click on the link at the bottom of the list post, you can log into your list interface, you can unsubscribe yourself, you can resubscribe yourself, you can change your email address. You wouldn't think so, but you can. It's just nobody ever does. Oh, and my other rule very quickly was don't forward stuff without people's permission. Just because somebody sent you a message and told you, you know, yada, 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 I wrote a message about what I didn't like about the Mac, and it got forwarded onto a different Mac access list where 20 Mac users decided to come and flame and attack me personally. Now, I'd never posted to that list, and I'd had no intention of posting to that list, but somebody had thoughtfully forwarded my message on. Often you'll see a lot of the stuff I've actually been forwarded and told to share with the list. So just be aware of that. Somebody's message is their property. Don't just go forwarding it all over the place because you think it's a good idea.
But the converse
just because you can get away with it on Twitter,
can get forwarded
you
anywhere,
go to an
and you should consider everything you write to be public. You know, like don't put anything on a list that you wouldn't want a future employer to read.
Because it's all on Google, everybody, unless it's private. Our archives are private, but...
Yeah, absolutely. But the other thing is I wouldn't have necessarily said it to this group of people. So I agree with you. It's 100% public. And if they'd stumbled across it, that's fine. But if somebody's forwarding your messages out and then people are coming back and hitting your inbox personally, that's when I have a bit of a problem with it. I'm quite happy to say why I hate the Mac to anyone. That's fine.
That wasn't an excuse. It was a warning. You know, the warning is, you know, just... And what you wish you could give the warning to people at age 12 or 8, because it's everything they write as stupid adolescents is going to be out there for future employers to read. You know, it's like, what do you do about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. It isn't your personal Braille and speak anymore, guys. It's all out there.
Google yourself. See what's out there. See the things you wrote. You know, every couple of months, Google your name and see what's bouncing around the place. We tend to do it just as a matter of course. Might sound a bit odd, but yeah, it is a real problem. And on the internet, well, I was told when I was about 11 and I got in trouble for brailing out some rude jokes that then got printed up, that when you write things down, I'll put my hand up, I did it, I brailed out as many dirty jokes as I knew and I got into trouble. And they said, look, it's not the fact that you know dirty jokes, and it's not the fact that you're telling your friends dirty jokes and you, hopefully you're telling them when we're not around, it's the fact that you wrote them down, and now we have knowledge of these jokes, and we have it in written form. So, yeah, be careful. When you write stuff on the internet, when you blog stuff on the internet, that's actually one of the reasons I've stopped blogging. I've decided that that's not something I really want to share with people. The things that I want to blog about, unless they're technical in nature, I'm not interested in writing down anymore, because it's not worth the grief. It only takes one bad egg in your friends list on your blogging site of choice, and all sorts of drama happens. So, yeah, guys, when you write stuff, keep in mind it is going to be out on the internet for years and years and years. And, yes, Twitter is archived. So keep that in mind as well.
Anyone else have any rules or comments before we move on to stress and time management? Okay. Stress and time management are two things we all need to work on. You will be spending a lot of time at your workstation, so it is important that your space is laid out well for you. A bad ergonomic design can make it very unpleasant for you to do your job. Make sure you can easily access and use your phone and headset. Sorry. Adjust your chair to a comfortable height, and if you use a screen, set up so that you can you do not have to tilt your head. If you use speakers, make sure they are loud enough that you do not have to bend forward to hear them. You should not have to bend your wrist to use your keyboard and mouse. Try to minimize distractions, such as noise, if you believe you are overly noise sensitive. And you would like suggestions, please talk with an instructor at some point. Use good time management skills. Stick to a prioritized list of activities. Your company might have a policy for which calls you must take first. Many organizations want you to take down calls first. These are calls where a whole office is waiting for a server to come back online. If you need to call a customer back, do this at the time you said you would. This is really important. we have students in other countries, and sometimes we had a situation where this student wasn't called back because dinner just went too long. And this was an issue because, remember, your customers are waiting for you. They're probably sitting down by the phone and waiting for your call if you tell them to call back at a certain time. If you can't, you want to get in touch with them as soon as you know you won't be able to call them back and let them know so they do not sit by the phone. It is only common courtesy.
I would just like to pull the pin on the grenade and just make a throwaway comment at this and we'll move on. Isn't it amazing how with all the technology at our fingertips in 2011, we just don't communicate like we used to? And that's what this module is all about. Pick up that phone that you've got and send somebody a text if that's something you need to do. I'm always amazed at how little people communicate these days with the myriads of methods we've got at our disposal.
Keep a list of customers that you must call back and check them off so that you do not forget someone or call them twice. Do not give favorite customers faster or better service. When reviewing the call board, do not take only the easy calls, because this is totally unfair and you're really making all of your other customer service people work harder. And you know what? Your bosses notice this. And if they want to lay people off, guess who's going? Do not take other technicians' calls unless you are told otherwise. It is also important to manage stress on the job. Being a technician can be extremely stressful. Take a moment between calls to compose yourself. It is important to treat each call as a fresh start. Do not carry over frustrations from your previous calls. Customers can sense this. Doing physical activities can also relieve stress. If you can take a short walk between calls, you can do that. I have a set of magnetic balls that I play with at my desk at home. They're just these little tiny balls, and they're really magnetic, and they stick together, and you can mold them into all sorts of...
I'm surprised you don't have... You've got three sets. Why didn't you bring another set to work? I'm morbidly curious.
Because I'm so busy with my hands over here that I don't have time to play with them.
Good.
Do simple stretches or a squeeze, a tennis, or stress ball. We've got some really good squeezy stress balls that you can get. If you can take a short break, try to relax. Ways to relax. Practice relaxed breathing. Slowly inhale, hold, and exhale. Listen to soothing sounds. There are so many iPod apps for this. Unbelievable amounts. If you want iPod apps, let us know. Go for a quick walk or climb a set of stairs. Eat a small, healthy snack, such as almonds with lots of protein. This is one for Maria, if she cares. Harvest Box will send you, for $7 a week, a little flat pack of four different types of fruit and nut healthy snacks. And they just show up in your mailbox and they're great.
And if you're not in Australia, you can dream about Harvest Box because it's really cool.
It is really good.
Moving right along. And keep in mind that these are all guidelines. I mean, there are sometimes when stress is going to be a problem and right. Like you can take a short walk when the help desk is full. But yeah, it's stuff to dream about.
Something else, going back to ergonomics and stuff, if you're going to be using headphones a lot, maybe not so much if you're on the phone, but if you're going to use headphones a lot, get a pair that's comfortable, that you like the sound of, and that you don't mind wearing for hours at a time.
Good luck.
I really struggle with this.
Everybody does. You show me a good set of headphones that's still in production, that's comfortable, that sounds good and works well, because you've got a market for that. For example, one of my friends has got a head that's so small that 98% of the headphones don't fit it.
Oh.
That's Gemma.
Oh, does she?
Oh.
I'll tell you some headphones that I'm liking, and they're super cheap. These little Logitech. What are they? Plantronics. They're a light, little analog headset that do cover your ears and actually make it easy enough to filter out some background noise. I can't do the Logitech Clear Chat Pro things at all because I just can't filter out the background noise. What did I just do?
You were talking.
Filtered out something.
I know that. I've just...
Did you break your brow sense?
I did. It would be a really good idea to freeze.
Oh.
Welcome to Windows CE, which I really wish they'd stop using in Note Takers. Stop it, people. There are .doc libraries for Linux. Okay, can we change platforms, please? Because Windows is not the only thing that reads .doc and .docs. Rant ends.
I must have dinged something here.
Elba did it. Too bad it didn't really take off.
Oh, I was having a rant from a HumanWare employee that wanted them to drop Windows CE as their development platform. They reckoned Apex should have moved to Linux. They're like, we did it with the VictorReader stream, we should really do it with our note-taker line. Let's face it, who's seen a VictorReader stream crash? I don't think mine's ever crashed yet.
Never.
No.
I've seen a BookSense crash. Oh, we probably shouldn't be going on about products. But
everything crashes sometimes.
Anyone else got any questions and comments while Grace's note taker's rebooting?
It's up. I'm just pulling it up where I was. All right. address. I'm just going to type in the word ball because that was close to... Yay, found it where I was. Yeah, no, Harvest Box really good if you're in Australia. yeah. Plan your weekend. You know, think about the fun things you're going to do. Avoid coffee and fizzy drinks that contain caffeine. Yeah, right. But Carrie can speak on the effect of actually doing this and how much it's helped him.
Very briefly, I took coffee out of my diet. And as a result, I have been a calmer. Coffee and Coke were the two things I took out. I have been a calmer, more peaceful, more relaxed person. If you need coffee to get you going in the morning, you need to ask yourself the question, why? Because maybe you are that sort of, you know, seized up and you really do need the coffee to get going, but I actually discovered that I don't need coffee to get going, and I'm a much happier person for not having it. And this is the continued existence, happy existence of my significant other, who doesn't get my coffee-fueled rants. I mean, let's face
it, really good.
The un-coffee-fueled rants are bad enough.
I'm a horrible person. I still drink Coke and love it, and that's just me, but yeah. Okay, any questions about stress or time management before we move on?
If you're interested in time management, sorry, just pointing out, there's some Thursday chats on it. If you really want bucket loads of stuff on time management,
they're
we did
good.
Some in 08
they're
and 09.
Really good.
Yeah,
I was looking at them for somebody I'm working with, and they're fantastic.
Everyone still awake?
Yep.
That's something else you got to be careful of, that you don't fall asleep on a call. I yeah. know someone that happened.
Wake up, guys. It's good. And this next bit's important, and something that you might actually really learn something about, which is service level agreements. A service level agreement, or SLA, is a contract that defines expectations between the organization providing the service and the person who you are giving your support to. And it defines an agreed upon, pardon me, level of support. It is a legal agreement defining responsibilities and liabilities for all parties involved. Some of the contents of an SLA usually include the following. Response time guarantees, often based on type of call and level of service agreement. Equipment and software that is supported. Where services to be provided. Preventative maintenance, diagnostic parts, availability of equipment parts. Cost and penalties. Time of service availability, for example, is it 24/7 customer service, Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, and so on. There might be exceptions to the SLA. Make sure to follow your company's business rules in detail. Some of the exceptions might include the ability of the customer to upgrade the level of service or to escalate to manager for review. Escalation to management should be reserved for special situations. For example, a long-standing customer or customer from a very large company might have a problem that falls outside the parameters stated in their SLA. In these cases, your management might choose to support the customer for customer relation reasons. Your job is to honor the SLA by providing the agreed-upon level of service. There might be exceptions to the SLA. Make sure to follow your company, as we said. Can you think of any other reasons to escalate a call to management?
Guys, is anybody awake? Like, really awake, or are we...
Are we lecturing to dead air here?
No,
I'm awake. I don't know about the other eight people.
I'm here.
Can anyone think of any reason to... Okay, can anyone think of any reason why we might do this?
Sadly, I can't what? Even think of one, and I shouldn't. Feel problem.
Well, if somebody says my lawyer's on the other line, and we're going to take action if you don't handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, you might want to.
That actually, luckily, doesn't happen too often in Australia, but I can understand over where you guys are, it's a real and present danger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, Bert, with his double talk in the background. We can hear you. Or is it a television?
You might want to
Alex
do it...
Alex says company crash.
Sorry, I thought I'd switched keys on this one, and I switched to the key that I had as my push-to-talk instead of the non-push-to-talk key. Oh. Sorry about that.
No worries. If there's a site-wide crash, you might get management involved to prioritize it up. If there is an incredibly rude, abusive customer, you may actually send them to management, depending on your company policy. You should be aware of and understand all of your company's policies regarding customers. You need to understand what you can and cannot do for them, because you do not want to overstep your role and promise something that you are not allowed to do. The following rules are examples of specific rules for a call center and how they might handle calls. Maximum time on call, example 15 minutes. Maximum call time in the queue, example 3 minutes. A number of calls per day, example minimum of 30 calls. Passing calls on to other technicians, example only when absolutely necessary and not without that technician's permission. What you can and cannot promise to the customer. See that customer's SLA for details. When to follow SLA and when to escalate to management. You should also know the rules your company requires you to follow. Here are some examples of rules you might need to follow. Arrive at your workstation on time and early enough to become prepared, usually about 15 to 20 minutes before your first call. Do not exceed the allowed number and length of breaks. Do not take a break or go to lunch if there is a call on the board. Do not take a break or go to lunch at the same time other technicians do. Stagger breaks among technicians. Do not leave an ongoing call to take a break, go to lunch, or go to a personal appointment. Make sure that another technician is available if you have to leave. Contact the customer if you are going to be late for an appointment, and I have to actually take that call. Sadly, I'm horrible.
One. Kind of ironic timing, actually, that.
She's getting giving somebody the address so that they can get the Google Maps so that they don't get lost on the way to the interview.
Yeah, I'm a horrible, horrible customer service agent. But that's kind of important because my guide needed to call and find out what address.
Why didn't he just Windows Messenger? That would have been too easy, I suppose.
Because he doesn't think about that. I think he's on the road.
Well, he's got my mobile too. Oh well.
He doesn't know I'm lecturing either.
Well, it is Thursday morning, and he is aware of the existence of the Academy, so anyway.
I've only been lecturing for 3 years. He was a former student. Okay. Contact the customer if you are going to be late for an appointment. If no other technician is available, check with the customer to see if you can call them back later, possibly in the morning. Do not show favoritism to certain customers. Do not take another technician's calls without permission. Do not talk negatively about the capabilities of another technician. You should also follow these common sense rules to ensure customer satisfaction. Set and meet a reasonable timeline for the call or appointment and communicate this to the customer. Communicate service expectations to the customer as early as possible. Communicate the repair status with the customer, including explanations for any delays. Offer different repair or replacement options to the customer if applicable. Give the customer proper documentation on all services provided. This will save you and anyone else who ever has to work on this customer's stuff a whole lot of trouble. Follow up with the customer at a later date to verify satisfaction. It is important to be ethical and operate within the law. Always be respectful of your customers and their property. This includes any data and information you come into contact with, such as emails, phone lists, records, or data on the computer, hard copies of files, information or data left on desks, any of that. Always ask permission before using a customer's computer. If you gather information such as usernames and passwords and document it, you must keep it confidential. You should probably destroy it. It is usually against the law to give this information to anybody. Never send unsolicited chain or forged messages to a customer. Here's a list of illegal activities. Remember, this is not a complete list. Do not make any changes to system software or hardware configurations without customer permission. Do not access a customer or coworker's account, private files, or email messages without permission. Do not install, copy, or use digital content, including software, music, text, images, and video, in violation of copyright and software agreements or applicable federal and state law. Do not use a customer's company IT resources for commercial purposes. Do not make a customer's IT resources available to unauthorized users. Keep sensitive customer information confidential. Do not knowingly use customer or company resources for illegal activities. Criminal or illegal use includes obscenity, child pornography, threats, harassment, copyright infringement, university trademark infringement, defamation, theft, identity theft, and unauthorized access. Do you know the copyright trademark law in your state or country? I'm sure we all kind of do. All right, the final section is on call centers. These are fast-paced, professional environments. Your job is to provide the level of support specified in the customer's SLA. Call centers may provide service to employees of one company, customers who own products of one company, or maybe independent businesses selling computer support services. You will probably work in a cubicle containing at least one computer, a phone, and a headset. Technicians in a call center have different levels of experience and may specialize in certain hardware, software, or operating systems. All call centers have some sort of help desk support software, which allows you to document and troubleshoot customer calls. We're going to go over the definitions of various call priorities. All right. Down call is the first one. The company cannot operate with any computer equipment. This is the most urgent type of call you'll get. You've got hardware. One or more computers are not functioning correctly. This is fairly urgent. And the third one is software. One or more computers have software operating system errors. And this is a little less urgent. Network. One or more computers that cannot access the network. And that's a 2 as well on the urgency scale. So your top one is going to be your down calls. On level 2, you have your hardware, software, network. enhancement. Request for additional functionality. This is going to be on level 3. It is important, but not as important as your level 2s. You will probably start out as a level 1 technician in a call center. Level 1 technicians are also called Level 1 analysts, dispatchers, or incident screeners. Your primary responsibility as a Level 1 technician is to gather information from the customer and document the relevant bits. Information you need to document includes contact information, what is the manufacturer and model of the computer, what OS is the computer using, is the computer using AC or DC power, is the computer on a network, if so, is it wired or wireless connection? Was any specific application being used when the problem occurred? Have any new drivers or updates been installed recently? If so, what are they? Description of the problem. Priority of the problem. Many problems are simple, and you will be able to help the customer solve them yourself. If the problem is complex, you may have to escalate it to a level 2 technician. You will need to translate the customer's ramblings into a quick 1 or 2 sentence description for a level 2 technician. This will allow them to diagnose and fix the problem without repeating the questions. Here's some descriptions of common problems. Printer will not print. The printer will print a test page but will not print from a specified application. Mouse doesn't work. the mouse is dirty and the user is not able to control the cursor. Cannot get onto the network. The user is not able to log into the network. Monitor not working. Monitor settings have been altered. No images can be seen on the screen. Computer will not turn on. The computer will not boot to Windows OS desktop. A level 2 technician is also known as a product specialist or technical support personnel. The following list of guidelines are examples of when to escalate a problem to a more experienced technician. These are generic guidelines. Your companies may vary. Escalate problems that require opening the computer case, installation of applications, operating systems, or drivers. Problems that will take a long time to walk a customer through, like CMOS changes and down calls. The Level 2 technician can also use remote diagnostic software to connect to customers' computers to update drivers and software access the operating system. All right, and then your Level 3 technician is the technician that will come to your place to do installation of cabling, wiring, and hardware. Basically, if you need new stuff, it's probably going to be a Level 3 technician. Any questions?
They ask you a question on those differences in the test, if I remember correctly.
Yep, they do. That's the end of our lecture, everybody. You have a week off. You know what I'd do with that week? I'd start working on your Module 11 and 12 labs. If you feel like you're going to be busy over the next month, you may want to look at 12.2.4, because that is huge. so
legendary among Kavi.
Why do we have a week off? I'm just morbidly curious.
Because we have role play.
We are having role play next week.
Class.
Yes, it's you have a week off of tasks.
Oh, don't tell them they've got a week off or they won't show up to lecture. I was just
you don't have a week off.
Yeah, you confused
me. You have role play
too,
next
even.
Week. Sorry.
You just have a week where you're not actively working.
Where you're not assigned.
Okay, so there are no actively assigned tasks that need to be done by this week on top of what you've already been assigned, and roleplay is next week. Sorry, go ahead, Marlene.
You can read Module 11 if you haven't.
I was just going to ask about the lab for Module 10.
Yeah.
When is that?
The week after next. I'm giving you guys a break to work on whatever you might want to finish up on and anything you want to get ahead on, because after this, it gets really busy. So if you can work ahead, you
there
want to.
There are a lot of labs.
If you want to stagger some of your 11 and 12 labs so you can get help now before everybody else does, that's a good idea, because we'll actually be able to help you. if you want to... Miss Lynn, next Wednesday, would you like to take your final...
Okie doke. Wait, hang on one second. Yeah, sure.
Wednesday night.
Do you mean Tuesday her time or Wednesday?
Yeah,
Tuesday
night.
Tuesday her time?
Yeah.
Okay, Tuesday night your time is what she actually means.
Tuesday night my time. Can we talk about... can we email about it?
Yeah, no worries. Okay. Because that's when we have our sighted person in to help you, is Tuesday nights.
What time are they there until?
They're here about 7 o'clock Eastern time until about 10 or 11.
Okay. I'll let you know. That should be fine.
Okay, cool. You all, I'm going to try to activate your practice final for you this week. And you guys, no one is allowed to take the final until Lynn has, just in case there are any diagrams that need describing.
And
we do not.
Do we need to take the? Yeah.
I was just going to say, nobody wants students crying into their beverage of choice because we didn't check the diagram descriptions. Because boy, the students get upset when that happens, which is why we're running it this way this year, so that we know we have a set of diagram descriptions that work and that are accurate, so that students don't jump up and down and say, "Well, those diagrams weren't described, and you're not being fair to us." And it's like, "Oh, whoopsie."
Well, look, to be fair, we didn't know either, so.
Cisco
doesn't tell us.
Changing things in with the.
Sorry, Ali?
Do we need to take the practice final on Ventrilo with you, or is that just the regular final?
No, just the regular final.
And you don't even have to take the practice final if you don't want to. It's costs nothing to your grade.
You should.
You should give it a go.
In fact, a lot of people have found the practice final to be a nasty wake-up call on the stuff that they should have revised. And that's probably a good thing. So take the practice final because it doesn't affect your grades.
He means study for the Americans.
Yeah.
Hey, revise means go over it again. In other words, you know, we're going over it again. I'm sorry, I didn't prioritize that properly, sure.
Yeah.
No, it's just funny because when you talk about revision for exams, I know exactly what you're talking about, but in school it's always studying for exams.
Make sure you study.
Cramming for exam. Study is what most people know. I'm just being...
Hang on, does anybody not know what revise means? Or shall I go out back and you know, yeah, give up at this point? Revise.
It means something different in U.S. English.
Yeah.
I think people know what it means in terms of, like, writing papers and stuff, you know, but in the terms of, in terms of, like, tests and things, we don't use that word.
Yeah, no.
So that's why I fixed it.
We recommend that you look at your notes again.
Review your notes.
Review your notes again, often called revise or study, so that you don't fail. Am I clear enough now?
I think we all understand the word fail.
Yeah, oh, good.
That's interesting. I've never heard that, Carrie.
What, revise? Like, revise your stuff before?
Okay.
Carrie,
I'd only heard it.
No, I hadn't either.
I've never heard it before.
Wow.
Okay. It's standard usage over here. Revision is to go over something that you've done again. It's derived from revisit, I believe. And it's shortened to revise. And it does mean that you go over material again. And we had books that were all handed out here that said maths revision, English revision, revise. So it's got two meanings. To either to go over it again or to refine something.
It's probably got more meanings. Yeah, for us it's only refine.
Yeah, we don't tend to use it.
Yeah, we don't. Over.
It makes perfect sense. It's like a lot of things that you guys say.
Oh, it does.
We just don't say it that way.
Yeah.
Struth.